Okay. Well, welcome to the first of two brown bags this week. At our daily work and daily lives, we believe in piggy excess, especially in relation to appetizers and desserts, neither of which I'm serving today. But my name is John Beck, and with my colleague Kurt Dewhurst, I co-direct our daily work and daily lives. And we've been very happy over the years with the association that we have with the Michigan State University Museum, both in terms of the Vincent Boyce Library, which is their traditional long-term name, and I'm not sure what they're called today, but Rick has been very, very good along with his colleagues on recording our last few years of brown bags, which are available on the MSU Library website through the card catalog. All you have to card catalog. Does that date me or what? Through the university library catalog, which and access to all of that wonderful digital material they have. All you have to do is put in our daily work of daily lives, and you'll be able to find it. Now, I'm going to send around, as usual. If Bill will help me, I will. So tomorrow, Kathleen Newman is here from Carnegie Mellon talking about strikes during the 1950s, both in film on the waterfront and other film gems from the 1950s, and how they represented some of the stuff that was actually happening in the streets of America. Next week, Frank Bartke is here, and Frank has written one of the seminal books on Cesar Chavez and the rise and, as he would put it, fall of the United Farm Workers. He's going to be here next Thursday, so a week from today, in this very place. Then the rest of the schedule is coming around. Now, let me say that there are sign-in sheets, so if you find them near you, just keep on circulating them. We're always happy to have those go around. Another quick announcement, next Monday night, 7 o'clock in the MSU Union Ballroom, there's a separate forum series that I happen to run on campus called Sharper Focus, Wider Lens. And it's going to be a very interesting forum discussion called Detroit, the Past, Present, and Future of the City. And that's really somewhat in conjunction with our one of our two exhibits downstairs, Detroit Resurgent. So if you haven't gone through Detroit Resurgent and An Extraordinary Document of Our World, please do spend some time today in the museum seeing those two wonderful portrait exhibits done by the French photographer Gilles Perrin and helped by his wife, Nicola Vencic, and curated by our own Howard Bossen. So please do check that out. Okay, without further ado, I want to thank Michael Rodriguez and the folks at the MSU Library Colloquia Series for the fact that they continue to work with us on many of our brown bags, including this one. We were originally slated to be across the street, but hey, you know, things happen, dates change, weird things shift, so here we are. But we're happy to be here back in our normal place, which is the MSU Museum Auditorium. Today, Andy Cohen and Noah Shule are going to help us understand a bit about both the fact that certain songs just work and that they carry on and that they become important to us. And they come out of different experiences. So there are songs that work, and there are songs that are reflected of different kinds of workplaces and different kinds of working class experiences. So we're very, very happy to have Andy and Noah here. They're actually in town for a couple of days because they'll be singing tomorrow night at the 10-pound fiddle, which, remind me, is 8 o'clock at the Unitarian Church. Yes. Okay. Thank goodness I got that done correctly. So Andy Cohen, by background, is the offspring of a union attorney. We were talking about the fact that sometimes we come by our activism and by our feelings about the world because we learned them in the cradle, or we learned them on the knee and everything else. And I think Andy definitely did that from what he said. And then Andy has sung with nearly everyone at one point or another, played with nearly everyone at one point or another. The Mamas and the Papas I saw in
Carolina.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And, Bob Dylan, all of them.
Yeah, you know, so...
Got him everything he knew.
So I think we'll hear more lies like that over this noon hour. Today's presentation is Songs That Work, Music from the Workplace to the Workhouse, with Andy Cohen and Noah Shule. Will you please help me in welcoming them to our daily work, our daily lives?
Ready?
Yeah, buddy.
1, 2, 3, 4. The best laid plans of mice and men off Conga Glen. My name's Andy Cohen. This is Noah Shule. We're talking about songs that work as distinct from work songs. We have been street singers, and our heroes have all been street singers. And the street singer occupies a special position. Very often they're blind or disabled. Very often they're blind because of tertiary syphilis or measles or accident, mumps, diseases that they couldn't fend off. There were no DPT vaccines back then. And people died by the thousands of things we take for granted. When you, I don't know if you can really imagine the work life of a child in a coal sorter or a child in a textile factory or on a farm. Up at 5, work all day, 12 hours. This is a 5-year-old. Somebody who was blind didn't have to do that. They didn't have to labor in the vineyards. They could learn a more exalted form of song, whether it was gospel or blues. We're going to talk about both of them. But just to give you an example, I lived in Asheville, North Carolina, during the 70s, and I ran a coffee house called Asheville Junction. And I was, old time music is one of the major exports of Asheville, North Carolina. It follows from the organization of the Asheville Folk Festival, the Folk Song and Dance Festival that Bascom Lamar Lunsford, a great collector, took over in 1928. I looked at the records. When I was there in 1975, there had been two people of African descent had ever played it. One of them was a train caller in 1938 who played some harmonica, and the other one was Earl White, who has a PhD in history and works at Colonial Williamsburg, but at the time was one of the Green Grass Cloggers. They were offended by that. Times have changed. I met a man while I was wondering why there wasn't any blues in Asheville. I found out there really was. It was just kind of suppressed. Etta Baker, famous guitar player, lived 90 miles away in Morganton. Reverend Davis, composer of that tune that we just played, it's called The Buck Dance. He lived down in Lawrence, South Carolina. There were people in Spartanburg that played. There were people in Marysville, Tennessee, and Kingston, Tennessee, who played. They were important. So Asheville was completely ringed around with blues people. Why wasn't there any? I went down on the corner, and I started asking my sneaky folklorist question. You remember the old guy that used to play blues around here? Oh, yeah, that's old Walt Phelps. He lives right over there. I went over there. I invited him to the coffee house. We got him a guitar. Talked with him and his wife, Ethel, for all kinds of time. And I asked him at one point how he had gotten to Asheville, because to hear him tell it, he'd laid every square of sidewalk in the whole city. But here he was living in a shack over on Dirt Eagle. No pension, no nothing. And he said, when I graduated the fourth grade, I came from Lawrence, South Carolina, the same place Reverend Davis came from. When I graduated the fourth grade, my education was complete, and I was a man, and I had to go get a job. And I heard they was hiring for a water boy up on the Bowcatcher Tunnel. Knocked a hole through Bowcatcher Mountain so the people who lived in Kenilworth could go home in their horses and buggies in 1904. I came up, I was the water boy. I'd bring water to the men while they worked. But it was also my job to get them up in the morning. They'd be up all night skinning them dice and drinking that scrap iron. They wouldn't want to get up. My job to get them up. I'd walk through the barracks where the labor lay asleep. And I'd sing my little shack rouster song, get them up for the day's work. You've been up all night, highballing round. Daylight come and you want to lay down. Raise up, better raise. Up, if you's aiming to make all day, raise up. Well, I hate to call you, but I have it to do. Captain, call me, and I have to call you. Raise up, better raise up. If you's aiming to make all day, raise up. Well, I had a little gal, and she didn't want to dance. I put her on my bed, Lord, and made her dance. I hugged her and I kissed her and I made her three spins. Come on, mama, do the same thing again. Raise up, better raise up. If you's aiming to make all day, raise up. Had lived on earth. One day Samson was walking alone, looked on the ground, saw an old jawbone, reached out his arm, God knows it broke like bread. When he got through moving
3,000 was dead. God. If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, tear this whole building down. Delilah was a woman, she was fine and fair. She had good looks, God knows, and coal black hair. Delilah, she gained old Samson's mind. First he saw this woman, she was a Philistine. Delilah, she sat down on Samson's knee. Tell me where your strength lies, if you please. She spoke so fine, she talked so well. Samson said, Delilah, cut off my hair. You can shave my head, clean up my hair. Strength come back like a natural man. If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I'd tear this whole building down. Woo!
That wasn't a work song. That was a jumping up and down song. I'll never forget when I first saw Reverend David. It was at the 1963 Brandeis Folk Festival, the youngest court that I was. And I was about as close to him as I am to you, because I was in the front row. I got there early because I heard this guy could pick. Oh, you could pick. Little guy comes out with great big guitar, you know. And he had 500 Jewish kids in the auditorium at Brandeis, jumping up and down like they was holy rollers. We ought to make a distinction between work songs and songs that work for a heuristic purpose. Work songs have a heuristic purpose. The people who sing them generally don't know this, but you need to get rid of all the carbon dioxide in your blood that you're building up by doing all this work. So when the shanty man sings, take this hammer, and the men go, huh! They're exhaling all that carbon dioxide so it doesn't build up into lactic acid and it makes the whole operation more efficient. And also, they often build in a rest period. Take this hammer, cap to the captain, oh my Lord. Tell him I'm gone, tell him I'm gone. That's how you tell a work song. It has carbon dioxide written all over it. You don't want to, you know, you got to work at a steady pace. Steady is what gets the job done.
Help them work in synchronicity.
Yeah.
For efficiency, too.
See, now, you know what that means. I mean, I can't imagine all of you people look pretty academic to me. You know, you all got degrees and stuff. Take this pencil, squeak, carry it to the teacher, squeak. We're going to do it for real. When I go like this, you need to go chakalaka. Let me hear you go chakalaka. 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 Just like it sounds. And it's spelled exactly the same way.
This is a railroad song that they were singing on the work lines.
Not just a railroad song, but a line and track song. Yeah. This song is about lining up the tracks so that they are parallel. What you never see in the picture is the civil engineer with the transit behind the candy dancers going,
one RCH over that way.
They put lining bars on the edge of the track, I believe, to line them up with the next... Mm-hmm. With the previously lined.
You don't want the tracks to get too spread, trust me. This is Noah Shaw.
Howdy.
Oh, boys, it's right.
Right, not right.
What I hate about lying in track.
One of these days gonna bust my back.
Oh, boys, can't you line the track?
Chack-a-lackin'.
Oh, boys, can't you line the track?
Chack-a-lackin'.
Oh, boys, can't you line the
track? Chack-a-lackin'. Sierra Louise go line and track.
Mary and the baby sitting in the shade.
Thinking all the money that I ain't made.
Oh, boys, can't you line
the track? Chack-a-lackin'.
Oh, boys, can't you line
Chack-a-lack.
Oh, boy, can't you line the track?
Chack-a-lack. See that old Louisa go line and track.
Well, I've been on the river 1910. Didn't have no woman like the driving man. Oh, boys, can't you line?
Chack-a-lack.
Oh, boys, can't you line?
Chack-a-lack.
Oh, boy, can't you line
the track? Chack-a-lack. See that old Louisa go line and track.
Well, if I could, I surely would.
Stand on the rock where Moses stood.
Oh, boys, can't you line the track? Oh, boy, can't you line the track? Oh, boy, can't you line? Shack-a-lack.
See how Louisa go line and track.
Mary and Martha, Luke and John, all in cycles, but the dead ain't gone. Oh, boys, can't you line the
Chack-a-lack.
Oh, boys, can't you line the
Chack-a-lack.
Oh, boys, can't you line the
Chack-a-lack. See how Louisa go line and track.
You keep talking about the break ahead. Ain't said nothing but the hog and bread.
Oh, boys, can't you
line
Chack-a-lack.
Oh, boy, can't you line
Chack-a-lack.
Oh, boy, can't you line
See all the boys go line and track.
That's to get everybody on the same page. So when they go chack-a-lack, their levers, there's a line of men. And they got crowbars in their hands. And when they go chack-a-lack, they give it all they got. Because them rails is heavy. I mean, I don't know if you've ever tried to pick up a little section of, you know, some people used to have them in their homes. Blacksmiths sometimes use them for anvils, a one-foot section. That's a heavy little sucker, you know.
Not to mention that, you know, singing while you're working like that alleviates the discomfort and some of the pain and anguish of that kind of labor. Extended periods of time that they were working.
Lots of different professions use such things. Fishermen in small boats, when they're pulling their nets in, they have net heaving songs. Big Boy Henry used to talk about that. He used to show the audiences how he used to work the nets with the other men. Helen Schneer is a famous ballad singer. And she told a story about how she was out walking in the woods one day and she heard off in the distance, and she couldn't quite make it out, so she went closer and closer and closer till she finally heard it. And she saw classic. It was classic. It was a bunch of guys trying to roll a great, big, huge log. And they were having the devil's own time doing it, and they had spontaneously come up with a work song. And when she got close enough to hear it, it was Royal Pudding! Royal Pudding! But, we're not talking about work songs. Now we know what work songs are and that they have a function. This is another kind of heuristic function. The world is full of great musicians, and most of them don't work very much. And it used to be even worse, you know, because all of the disabled people, you know, picking a guitar on the street corner, but now it's just hippies. My friend Bob Bovee and a friend of his named Stevie Beck, they wrote this one song about the process of trying to make a living being a street singer. That's making a living when you don't have no gigs. I'm standing on the corner with a guitar in my hand, just a poor musician in a poor old street string band, trying to make a living out of all these songs so old, trying to keep my feet warm out here in the cold. When I'm gone, they'll talk about my singing. When I'm gone, they'll remember the good old days. I'll be in heaven with my golden guitar ringing, where there's a crowd on every corner and a hat that's full always. Standing, trying to keep warm enough to move my aching fingers, trying to get 2 bits from every soul that stops and lingers, maybe just a dime for every smile on a passing face. I'd stack them up to heaven and I'd climb up to that place. When I'm gone, they'll talk about my singing. When I'm gone, they'll remember the good old days. I'll be in heaven with my golden guitar ringing, where there's a crowd on every corner and a hat that's full always. Pickett Wilson. They say that up in heaven, street singers do so fine. You have to walk around the block to get into the line. Walk up to the singer's hat and drop in a $5 bill. All the streets are heated there to keep away the chill. When I'm gone, they'll talk about my singing. When I'm gone, they'll remember the good old days. I'll be in heaven with my golden guitar ringing, where there's a crowd on every corner and a hat that's full always. Well, Noah,
yeah.
I would like it very much if you would tell these people all about Blind Willie Johnson.
Oh, man.
You know who Blind Willie Johnson is, don't you? You know about the Explorer satellite that's just leaving the solar system? On an endless loop, Blind Willie Johnson is playing to be the initial greeting for whatever ETs are out there. He's playing "Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground."
Well, I don't know a whole lot about the man, but his music.
You know his music? You do know his music?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I'm going to turn it over to you for a minute, and you just handle it, okay?
I don't know how to tie Blind Willie into it, but but what I had to say, but
folks, this is Noah Scholl, my young whiz kid friend. Give him a hand.
So this is, at Andy's request, this is Blind Willie Johnson's song, "By and By I'm Going to See the King." Now, there were several versions of the song, but this is probably one of the more popular and wider heard. I'll just go into it for you. Then I'd like to talk about some work songs.
Bye.
that's an example of Blind Willie Johnson's "By and By I'm Going to See the King." I suppose, in the context of the program, it's a song that works because it's a number one, it's a gospel song, and it's of a spiritual nature. What I had in mind to talk about at first was how work songs and some of these, similar to the song "Line and Track" that we just played earlier, those kind of field songs and work songs evolved into what became the birth of American blues music in general. And after that, everything we hear now on the radio and pop music and rock and roll.
It kind of condenses over time into this sort of globular mass of popular music. And it takes, without the blues, American music wouldn't be what it is.
Yeah.
Because it suffuses all the rest of it.
But, you know, and there were a couple different locations in the South that were kind of the crib of the baby of the blues, you know. And a lot of those were, at first, penitentiary work farms, like Angola and Parchman. And
well, any penitentiary, because the
culture inside a penitentiary freezes and ossifies because there's not much input from outside. It's a little different now, but that's the reason. You don't get much news, and you don't get a lot of media input relative to what you get on the outside. So things slow down, and culture in a prison changes very slowly. That's why Lomax, John and Alan Lomax, visited these prisons on Angola, Parchman, the Texas one, and they visited other prisons as
well. For the Library of Congress.
Yeah, it was when they were working for the Library of Congress.
You know, so those were some of the places, as well as the commercial plantations in the South.
Well, they were like prisons.
Some of them. I don't know if all of them were as bad as one as the next. But
you work pretty hard when you work. Between harvest and planting season is when people had fun. And you want to tell them about dockeries and
yeah,
so on?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm edging it into.
Yeah.
The Dockery Farm plantation in northwestern Mississippi, north central actually.
Yeah, down near Clarksdale.
Yeah, right off on the Sunflower River. So that was, when people talk about the birth of the blues, you know, several names come to mind, like W.C. Handy, Charlie Patton. It's been said and supposed that Handy had first heard the blues. They say he's the father of the blues, but he published the first proper blues song, St. Louis Blues.
Published the St. Louis Blues, also the Memphis Blues.
Yes.
Which was even earlier. But he said that in about 1890 or so, he heard a man, he was sitting on a bench trying to sleep, waiting for a train at the Tutwiler, Mississippi Railroad Station, and there was a fella playing a guitar with a knife, you know, like he plays it. He was playing slide guitar, talking about going where the
Southern cross
the dog. And the Southern goes east-west, and the Yazoo Delta goes north-south, and they cross right there.
So they're crossing the yellow dog.
Yeah.
Supposed that guy was possibly Henry Sloan, but we don't know that.
That's speculation. Henry Sloan was sort of the legendary blues player. He's the one who taught Charlie Patton, who was one of the oldest and one of the earliest to record. Do you know Peavine?
Yeah.
You got
it's a G.
We're going to do Peavine Blues. This is a Charlie Patton number.
Are you going to sing it, or do you need to sing it?
We can both sing it.
Okay.
We haven't rehearsed this, folks. We've barely talked about it. but we're game, if you are. Now, I want to point out a couple of things. Peavine is one of the oldest, not only one of the oldest blues, it's one of the oldest forms of the blues. You know how blues are supposed to be AAB over 12 bars. You say a line, and then you repeat the line, and then you resolve the line. This is just a statement of the same line over and over again. Some of the verses.
We should also mention the train wreck. The Peavine.
Oh, the Peavine train wreck.
Which is what it's about. Well, the Peavine was, it ran to Chicago?
The Peavine was just a local. They called it the Peavine because the Mississippi Delta is essentially flat. It's not really a delta. That's down by New Orleans. The Mississippi Delta is called that because it's shaped like a D. But what it really is 40 feet of rich, black, swamp, organic dirt. And that's how you grow so much cotton in Mississippi. It just thrives on the dirt because there's all kinds of critters buried in it that help, you know, give it nutrients. And because it was so flat, when they built the railroad near Clarksdale, they had to find every little 2-foot hummock they could and string the tracks between them. So if you to go 10 miles from Clarksdale out to Dockery Plantation, it takes all day because it winds around forever. That's why they call it the Peavine.
Do you know when the Great Peavine?
About 1910. Yeah.
So this is kind of a crash of it. It was a big deal.
Yeah. Actually. It was the first transportation they had in the area.
Woman, I want got a hand.
got, what, a half an hour left? Okay, let me just ask and anticipate. Does anybody have any questions? Because we're supposed to have a Q&A here. So just holler it right out. No questions.
Questions at this time?
Yes.
I've got one. Read the magazines, go to the festivals, listen to some of the second, third generation artists speak. They make the distinction between Delta and Piedmont blues, one being kind of darker and the other being, I think it was Phil Wiggins once said something like...
You just happened to hit on the subject matter of my master's thesis. I looked at 96 players who had been born between 1867 and 1940 from 14 different states across the South, all below the Mason-Dixon line, and I found that in the Piedmont, they stick their thumbs out like this, like they're playing a banjo, like they're clawhammering a banjo, and in the Delta, where they're playing a different kind of music for a different kind of dancing, they let their hands swing around like this. So they're continually whacking one or two strings, or maybe three strings, again and again and again. And it leads to a whole different kind of playing. Do you have a really Delta kind of piece?
Oh, yeah, lots of it.
I would like my erstwhile assistant here, he's the real expert in Delta stuff.
Well, would you like the Willie Brown stuff or the Charlie Patton stuff?
Yeah, do the Willie Brown stuff. Like this that? Is highly developed. This is beautiful. He does that.
So
you know that nice
can
song.
The M&O Blues, another railroad song, as a matter of fact. But
okay.
To talk a little bit just shortly about Willie Brown, he was probably the best sideman of the blues, one of them in throughout history. Robert Johnson even heralded his best parts.
He played with the first generation guys, and also played with the second and third generation guys.
But there were two Willie Browns.
Two Willie Browns, but we're talking about the one from Mississippi, not the one from Arkansas.
Right. So he was a friend of Sunhouse, and worked with Sunhouse as well, Charlie Patton, and in Crossroads Blues from Robert Johnson, you hear him sung about, you can run, you can run, tell my friend boy, Willie Brown,
right.
This is the guy.
Just a little factoid about Sunhouse, who's one of the major saints in the blues hagiography. He was the tractor driver on Stovall's plantation. And when he left for Rochester, New York, Muddy Waters took over his job. That was a high prestige job, because people, remember, were being pushed out by mechanized agriculture. So if you had the mechanized, you know, if you were in charge of the mechanized wherewithal, you were secure.
He had recorded under the name Willie Brown of his own, but he was recorded on many other people's recordings. He's on there with Charlie Patton on at least five that I know of. And probably more that just have been uncredited, as well as with Sunhouse. So this is his M&O Blues, and this one is, his other ones were also under the name Kid Bailey, presumably. Presumably. Why that happened, I'm not sure, and I don't know if anybody is. But anyway, this is Willie Brown's M&O Blues.
Thank you. some of your men ought to be ashamed of yourself. Some of your men ought to be ashamed of yourself.
So that's some of the very some of the earliest stuff. I mean, as Charlie Patton predates it absolutely, as well as some of the other people like the people that he was playing, the Chapmans as well. I mean, we should talk about the Mississippi Sheiks. They were kind of like one of the first pop acts from that area, right?
They were indeed. But I was gonna. I was going to see if I could inveigle our audience into singing another one with me.
Which one do you want to do?
You ever have somebody come to your house and they eat you out of house and home? That's what I'm doing over their house right now. And every time you turn around, they's in the cabin and getting that last Oreo cookie. Days in the cupboard getting that last bowl of Cap'n Crunch. You know what? To add insult to injury and rub salt in the wound, the worst thing they do, they go into the refrigerator and they get that last piece of Kentucky Fried Chicken, and then you gotta lick their fingers. If you have this condition, it is a disease. And if you have this disease, especially if I am the causative agent, if you have this disease, I am the doctor what has the cure. If you can't say it to them, and you can't say it to them, I mean, what are you going to do? Just turn around and say, go, never darken my door again? You might need them someday. You know what I'm talking about. It's a dilemma. The solution to the dilemma is, if you can't say it to them, sing it to them. Everybody repeat after me. Come down and see me sometime.
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 Eat your breakfast before you come.
Eat your breakfast before you come.
Bring your dinner in your hand.
Bring your dinner in your hand.
No, I'm from Memphis. Hand. And get out before supper time.
And get out before supper time.
Come down, see me sometime. Come down and see me sometime. Eat your breakfast before you come. Bring your dinner in your hand. Get out before summertime.
Sing!
Come down and see me sometime. Come down and see me sometime. Eat your breakfast before you come. Bring your dinner in your hand. Get out before summertime. I had a little bag. It was made of gold. Strings was made with twine. And the onlyest song that I ever could sing was I wish the prettiest gal was mine.
Hey,
come down and see me sometime. Come down and see me sometime. Eat your breakfast before you come. Bring your dinner in your hand. Get out before supper time. Well, a rich gal drives in a Cadillac car. Poor gal drives in a Ford. My gal, she gets around town riding on an old skateboard.
Hey,
come down and see me sometime. Down the street, and I said, honey, would you be my wife? Well, her boyfriend come up with a Winchester rifle, try to run me out of all of my life.
Say,
come down and see me sometime. Come down and see me sometime. Eat your breakfast before you come. Bring your dinner in your hand. Get out before supper. Well, after I got out the hospital and I was feeling my Cheerios again, I went down my best gal's house, and this is what happened. I went down to my best gal's house. She just gone to bed. Well, I pull off my clothes, getting there with her. Got a bed slapped out of my head.
Say,
come down and see me sometime. Come down and see me sometime. Eat your breakfast before you come. Bring your dinner in your hand. Get out before supper time. Died with a whooping cough. Sparrow died with the colic. The cat come back with the fiddle on his back. He's a munching on down to the frolic.
Say,
come down and see me sometime. Come down and see me sometime. Eat your breakfast before you come. Bring your dinner in your hand. Get out before it's supper time. To answer your question succinctly, there's a barrier called the Appalachians between two regions that each promote blues and have been doing so since the 1890s. And it is not surprising that they play one way on one side and another way on the other side, because even though the legal culture of the Solid South was consistent throughout its application since 1877, right up until today, the informal culture was differential a little bit through each community. So...
it's not one bit surprising that they play one way on one side and the other way on the other side. The Piedmont stuff, there's more thumb and one runs. Like that. In the Delta, when the guitar player wants to make a series of notes, a run, he'll do it with one finger. Either with his finger or his thumb.
That question a little bit too.
Sure.
With the Piedmont stuff, it seems like there's a little bit more of the Irish.
Like there was mutual absorption
Between the immigration.
It does tend to be a little bit more canonical. Mm-hmm. Piedmont stuff is a little more dependent on raw technique, so it helps to have something to be able to play it.
I mean, if you were to take people like. John Hurt's not, he's kind of a Piedmont player, but he's not necessarily from the Piedmont region. But Elizabeth Cotton, for instance.
Well, she was a Piedmont player. Absolutely. Elizabeth Cotton was from Carrboro, North Carolina. John Hurt, who played similarly, Mississippi John Hurt played similarly. He was from Avalon, Mississippi, which is right at the border of the Mississippi Hills. It's a little bit away from the river. He was born in Avalon, Mississippi. That's 7 miles from Money, Mississippi, which is where Emmett Till met his end. So people used to say how, well, John Hurt got along with the white folks. That was why, in my opinion, he knew to do it. He knew not to be offensive. He knew not to do any grandstanding. Because that won't get you very far if you're black in Mississippi, even today.
But I think in the Piedmont musical tradition, there's a little bit older.
I think it's more that it's older music that he was playing, and he was Avalon is a little bit sequestered away. It's a little bit more isolated than a lot of places in Mississippi.
Do you want to show? Let's do some of that Elizabeth Cotton.
You want to do a Mississippi John Hurt song?
We can do that too.
Which one would you want to do?
This is
fancy picking, folks.
So let's do the Libba song first.
Okay.
Libba Cotton, she was the Seegers' housekeeper as well, and they discovered her. They didn't realize that she had.
Right. She was there like she. Peggy Seeger ran away in a department store and Libba found her. So about a month later, they called her up and asked her if she'd like to be the maid for the Seeger family, so she came and worked for them many years. And one day, after she'd been working there about 5 or 6 or 7 years, she just took a break and she picked up a guitar and she started playing.
Yeah,
and she was
like
extremely left-handed, so she played like this.
And upside down.
And of course, the Seeger, she apologized to them for, like, lying down on the job. And they said, no, Libba, you're wonderful. We had no idea you played the guitar. And from that day on, she became their, like, prize discovery and kept a suitcase packed. She was in her 60s when she started. She was in her 90s and still playing. Libba Cotton taught us all freight train. She wrote it. She taught it to Peter, Paul, and Mary. She taught it to Jackie Washington. She taught it to some English people who made a hit out of it.
freight train run so fast. Freight train run right past. Please don't tell what train I'm on, so they won't know what route I've gone. When I die, please bury me deep down at the end of Old Chestnut Street, so I can see old number 9 as she goes rolling by. Sing it. Freight train run so fast. Freight train run right past. Noah was so impressed, he named his little girl after Libicoff.
Right. She sings the song to me now. She's 5.
freight train, run so fast. Freight train, run right past. Please don't tell.
So, we can easily show the, especially with that song in particular, the similarity between that Piedmont music and some of John Hurt's
stuff. John Hurt's music. But I think John Hurt doesn't live in this isolation. Exactly. He's just preserving an older form of music. What we're talking about is the difference between building your music on this and doing a belly rub while you're doing it. You know, shining a buckle. Yes. Doing the shimmy she wobble. getting close. You know what I'm talking about. And doing this, building it on this. Thumb that goes back and forth, that you squeeze and stagger your finger, your other fingers with. Avalon Blues. It's how Mississippi John Hurt got found. A guy named Dick Spotswood, the record collector. He's looking at an old map and listening to John Hurt on the newly issued Harry Smith anthology. They reissued one of John Hurt's 78s, which he did in 1928. And here it was, 1962. It's a long time. World War I, the Depression, we're all over with. You know, civil rights movement's beginning to build up. He's listening to this, and he's looking at an old map. He hears, Avalon's my hometown, always on my mind. He's looking at a map of Mississippi, and his eye lights on a little hamlet called Avalon. He made the mistake of telling a friend of his. The friend took off in a car that night with the daughter of a senator from one of these Washington galas. He said, hey, you want to go on a trip to Mississippi? Woo-hoo, sure. You know, off they went. 10-state APB following them a whole way. The senator was not pleased. I don't know which senator it was, but
his daughter contributed to the cultural enrichment of the 1960s. They drove all night to Avalon, Mississippi, and he pulled up next to the general store and says, "You guys ever hear of John Hart?" They say, "Yeah, he's right up there."
Name on the mailbox.
And next thing you know, Tom Hoskins had him signed to a contract. He says, "I'm from Washington. I'm here to help you." John just packed his bags. He figured Tommy was from the FBI and he was going to arrest him. So he just went with him. Imagine his surprise when he started hearing his old 78s again, played by young white guys. I don't think he ever figured it out, but he spent the rest of his life as the darling of the folk movement, and that's right. Just fine.
We'll do Lewis Collins?
Let's do Lewis Collins. Miss Collins weep, Mrs. Collins moan, 'cause her son Lewis is dead and gone. Angels lead him away.
Angels laid him away.
Laid him 6 feet under the clay. Shot once, sheriff shot two. Shot poor Lewis, shot him through and through. Angels laid him away.
Angels laid him away.
Laid him 6 feet under the clay. Angels laid him away. Play it, Brother Noel. Well, the women all heard that Lewis was dead. All run home and re-ragged in red. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Very quick question. What was the name of the Seeger maid again?
Elizabeth Cotton.
Elizabeth Cotton.
Elizabeth right. Cotton, yes. C-O-T-T-E-N.
That's right.
She worked at humble jobs all her life until she became sort of an arch rock star. You know all those rock stars from the 60s that got into all that trouble and took all those drugs? Every single one of them started out as folkies just like me and Noah and you. Every one of them. They all learned how to play Gary Davis and Mississippi John Hurt and Skip James.
before they wrote their first song. They all listened to the blues. They all listened to country music. Most of them listened to the Harry Smith anthology. So, you know, it's kind of like we all drank from the same ocean. We all took from the same textbooks. It's a really uniting thing in our culture to have that.
Sounds like it's safer to stay with folk music than to go into rock.
Well, there's that about it. There's that about it. You know, I mean, there's a guy named Dave Evans. David Evans was a very fine musician, also a classic scholar from Massachusetts. His buddy, Al Wilson, was a real good player. Al Wilson was the guitar lead guitar player in Canned Heat. Al went to be in Canned Heat. David went to UCLA to grad school. Which one of them is still alive? You know? David's just about to retire and become a rock star.
Parallels the blues a little bit there, too. You know,
oh, yeah,
the, rocker, the rockers and the blues.
Yeah, David knows a little bit about the blues. Yeah. Yes. If you ever get really interested in it, you should read David Evans's, it's essentially his PhD dissertation boiled down to a popular book. It's called Big Road Blues, and it tells the story of a man named Tommy Johnson.
Yes.
Which you should tell the story of, because you know a whole lot more about Tommy Johnson than I do.
Well, Tommy Johnson was another of the blind guys, the whole mess of blind blues men. I believe Tommy was originally from Georgia and ended up in Mississippi.
Didn't end up in Mississippi.
He was, his claim to fame, his big, two biggest songs were probably Canned Heat Blues and Big Road Blues. And Big Road Blues has been done by just so many people. And of course, Canned Heat Blues, it's actually Canned Heat Sterno, you know, solid alcohol, methyl alcohol.
Yeah, he was about 50 years old when he died. Canned Heat is Sterno.
Yeah.
You can strain it through Wonder Bread, and it will come out ethylated alcohol. You hope.
And make you go blind as well. I mean, which is another reason some of the blues men were blind.
Well, he wasn't. Imagine,
but no, he was.
He wasn't.
Right, but it was.
He was sighted. There was Blind Joe Reynolds, who was blind.
I thought Tommy Johnson was blind. No.
No, Tommy Johnson was sighted. He was also, he was kind of a mess, but he could play. He's the one, people think Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil.
Oh,
it was Tommy Johnson. Tommy Johnson.
They said that about
down at the crossroads.
That's for sure. What do you want to do? You want to do Big Road or Canned Heat?
I want to do Big Road Blues.
Oh, okay.
I want you to do Big Road Blues.
All right.
I'll just sort of follow along. Big Road Blues. The big road is Highway 61. It's the one that goes up to Chicago.
This is another one of the. You want to talk about songs that work? This is one. It's. You'll hear this if you go to New Orleans.
Just fade it out.
If you go to New Orleans, you'll hear all sorts of bands, street bands, playing this at work all day long in the sun. Well, your mama
your papa told me to. Lordy, well, your mama told me good. Your papa told me to.
Ladies and gentlemen, we probably strayed a little bit far afield from the subject matter, but we wanted to give you a good show, and I hope we did that.
Well, before they leave, first of all, let's give them another round of applause.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, and do come to our show at the UU.
Not little, but this perfectly good instrument has been sitting here waiting
yes.
to play it. Okay. And all of you are probably curious about it, so I'm sure that Andy will help us out on that in a second. But before he does, let me announce again, Brown Bag tomorrow, Kathleen Newman talking about film in the 1950s and strikes in the 1950s. So you can come back to that. Frank Barkey, as we come today, talking about the United Farm Workers. They both are in this very room, so please do come to the film. And thanks so much, and thanks again to Noah and Andy. But let's have... Andy, tell us a little bit about this great instrument that he brought with him.
This is my Dulciola. Oh. It looks like a little grand piano, like the one Linus plays in The Funnies. It was made by the Toledo Symphony Company in Toledo, Ohio, this particular one in 1905. They made about 5,000 of them. Then the Depression of 1907, which was rather like the Depression of 2008, many of the same reasons, killed hundreds of thousands of small businesses, among them the Toledo Symphony Company. This is a chord zither. If you took the keyboard mounting off it, you'd have a zither with seven chords and two chromatic octaves on the right side. I'm going to play something by a man named Washington Phillips, who was from Texas. We used to think he played one of these. It sounded like one of these, but it really wasn't. But this is perfectly amenable for his music. It's really... Washington Phillips was another one of these guitar... He would have been, if he played guitar, he would have been a guitar evangelist. He was a Nazarene evangelist. He called his instrument that he made himself. Played with his finger. He called that a Nazarene, apparently. And he played heart songs, you know, the Reverend Charles Kindley kinds of hymns, like Farther Along, Take Your Burden to the Lord. And he played this one called A Mother's Last Words to Her Son. A black man from Texas playing a zither with two hands. Playing in a very moving on up kind of style.
during the moving on up days, you know, 1890s, early 1900s.
Come to the fiddle, 8 o'clock.